And it is a, you know what, I'm going to call this a very exciting edition of the Going Overtime Wrestling Podcast here on InsideSTL.com. John, that's because we have tickets to give away to Money in the Bank next, next month. Well, we're recording this on May 31st, but we're going to drop it on June 1st. But yes, June 18th is when you can... when you can win those tickets to Money in the Bank. We will we'll do those at some point in the podcast today. So you got to listen. Haha.
That's the way that it should be.
Yes.
And looking at ticket sales, I don't know that you're going to be able to get tickets very much longer anyway. So this might be the only place you can get tickets here in the next week or so, especially if they keep adding to the car. I'm already more excited for Money in the Bank, even if it wasn't going to be in our area, than I am for whatever the heck's supposed to happen at the Extreme Rules match. Pay-per-view, sorry.
They do add a few matches, but we will get to that in the SmackDown portion.
Hurry up and get through the Raw portion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what? Like, okay, I'm excited. The way Raw starts off, it starts off with Miz and Dean Ambrose. Well, I guess Miz calls out the tag team of Cesaro and Sheamus, which I already like this because they're not focusing on the five-man Extreme Rules match. They are focusing on a secondary match and then even bringing in another secondary match with the tag team titles and the Intercontinental titles, and they bring the heels out first. So I'm already excited that they're trying to push the entire card, it would seem, for the Extreme Rules, which is this Sunday.
I think they have to.
Yeah, but you don't see it often at the beginning, the very beginning of the show.
You're right. But I will say this. They have done a better job. It's changed a lot in the last year or so. And I think more so because when it was Triple H and Stephanie, they started every show. And they were centered around the main event storyline all the time. So that's what was there. I think you can attribute it as much to that element being gone as you can anything else, because you're not authority figures aligned with main event characters. You just have a commissioner and a general manager, and they don't even have to be on the show every week, and it allows you some freedom to do other things with other guys in the card. If I remember, I remember when the women from NXT came up, and they started off a show, and that was the first time I think I remember noticing, like, wow, that's different, that somebody who doesn't have in a world title picture isn't at the beginning of the show. So it is refreshing, though. It'd be even better if they started with, like a match every now and then. Like,
well, they had a match very, very quick last week, and now they're doing this week. So they are that's 2 weeks in a row that it has been a little different than the 20-minute talking segment to start Raw, because very soon after you get the tag team of Cesaro and Sheamus coming out, Dean Ambrose quickly comes out. And you see exactly where this is headed, although they made Miz and Sheamus and Cesaro look like idiots because they didn't see this coming. But Dean Ambrose has the Hardy Boys with him, and we are about to get a tag team match, or a six-man tag team match, to start off the show. So very soon into the show, we get a six-man match, and this one goes a very, very long time. This almost takes up, I think, the first 40 minutes of the show.
Goodness, that is a long time. So, Sheamus and Cesaro are getting a hell of a lot of TV time over the last 3 weeks.
They're your unconventional, what is it, the Odd Couple tag team that has worked, and in the meantime, they don't have anything else for these two characters who I think are highly thought of. Cesaro, hell of a worker. Sheamus, really good friends with Triple H. So they got to give him something, and this seems to be working.
Be nice to Sheamus.
He's talented, but he is workout buddies with Triple H. All I'm saying is that does help him in a lot of his pushes, I would imagine.
It doesn't hurt, but this thing has come organically.
Yeah.
This thing started out as a goof. This is the kind of stuff that fans really love to get behind, because it started out as something that I'm sure who knows how much of it was all planned from the beginning of that that best of seven series, but I can't imagine that they saw them a year later being where they are right now. And this is at its best. Not when somebody's saying, all right, we're going to shove you as hard as we can down your throat. These are just two guys they had nothing to do with. They put them together, and they've made magic over a year. And they've grown to where they are right at the top of the tag division. And they put on great matches. And these two with the Hardys are fantastic.
Yeah, the Hardy Boys and Dean Ambrose get the win as Matt Hardy hits the Twist of Fate. Jeff Hardy hits the Swanton. And they get the 1-2-3, the three faces stand in the ring and celebrate this match. And then this is where Raw starts to get really weird. I know you watch on Hulu, so I am interested in how much they show. Because they go to the announcer table, and you see clearly Corey Graves is on his cell phone. He's on his cell phone texting as Michael Cole starts talking about what's going on tonight. He first throws it to Booker T. Booker T talks. He then throws it to Corey Graves, who is not paying attention. Corey Graves takes off his headset and walks off the set.
Yes. The only thing I remember for that segment is that Booker T had sweet shoes and they should stand up. No more sitting down. They look all hunched over. Stand them up. It was a very odd segment.
It was, but that leaves intrigue. I knew I wanted to stick around past the commercial break and make sure I didn't miss when they came back. Corey Graves is there. Angle reads something about him being a disgrace and embarrassment to the WWE. That he's an Olympic gold medalist and he's a disgrace now. I guess somebody is not happy with Kurt Angle with his job as GM. Kurt Angle asks if it's some kind of joke. Corey Graves says it appears to be serious. Graves says he loves the job Kurt Angle is doing and says that he would hate for anything to throw a wrench in the well-oiled machine. Angle asks who gave Graves the information. Graves says people tell me things. And he wanted to give Angle a heads up about the information he has. And Angle let Angle know that he is there to help. Corey Graves had a big show.
If you're paying attention to how this has been built over the months and months, obviously Graves is being texted by Seth Rollins.
So that's where you... You being serious about that?
No, I'm joking. Well, I don't know. Well, Seth Rollins seems to text Corey a lot, or at least Corey likes to tell people a lot on the air that Seth texts him. So it could all work together. I wouldn't have even known that was constant unless you hadn't pointed it out to me like a month ago.
Right. We'll get to more of that later on in the show, too.
A lot of texting with Seth. That makes perfect sense. How great would that be if you looked back?
And Seth Rollins and Kurt Angle?
he's the feeder of information. Rollins is feeding the information. He's got sources, remember?
Yeah,
Corey has sources.
Yeah, he and more of Corey Graves to come too, because that's when we hit the ring. And speaking of Seth Rollins, he has a Elias Sampson, the Drifter, has a match up next.
He's awesome.
Which this was funny at first because he's singing a song, and then the lights come on in the ring, and his enhancement talent opponent is already in the ring.
That's right, like Bray Wyatt style.
Yeah, he has to sit in the corner and listen to his opponent sing.
Or if you're the enhancement guy just hired to go work a match on Raw, you're like, I get to sit in the corner and watch Elias sing.
Yeah, I get to be in here 3 more minutes and then the match will last.
Yeah, you get to sit there for 2 minutes and actually take it all in.
I think he had a phone with him and was taking pictures.
I don't know that he's allowed to do that. I don't know that he has that kind of pull.
Zach Evans is the gentleman's name. Elias Sampson gets the quick win. And the entire time I'm watching this, I am thinking that this guy, beard, hair, everything, he looks exactly like Seth Rollins. One of these two need to change their look.
I don't know you have to do that, though, unless they're going to be programmed with one another. I'd be fine with Seth changing the way that he looks. Totally fine. Just because it's, he's been around longer and a refresh is always a good thing. Finding a way to change how you look and change your character and evolve, I think that would not be a terrible thing. And we'll talk about, you know, their match later on. But no, Samson is the way that he is. They brought him in like this. It fits his character perfectly. He's just a grungy, just not clean shaven, just walking around playing his guitar, irritating people. It's exactly what he's supposed to. And then he goes and beats the holy Jesus out of you.
Yeah, he's had two good matches so far, last week against Dean Ambrose, and then this week they give him an enhancement talent to get the victory over. So Corey Graves does come back, though, and Cole asked what it was about. Graves says that it was all personal. This is now when we get to the one of the two main events. Yes.
Hold up. Hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Realize what just happened, how this all plays out. Corey Graves gets a message, walks off, doesn't say anything. Corey Graves goes into the back on television, talks to Kurt Angle about said message, walks back to broadcast table, sits down, pretends like nothing has happened since he walked off.
There's nothing more to say about it.
What was that about, Corey? Oh, did you not see the segment we just did a minute ago where they showed what I talked to Kurt about?
The next match on there's so much more to peel from Corey Graves. I want to get to it, but we get the triple threat match: Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Bray Wyatt. That is your triple threat match, one of two main events on the evening. Gets a good amount of time, and the end comes when Finn Balor hits the sling blade and hits the coup de grace on Bray Wyatt. That is when Samoa Joe runs in, throws Balor into the ring post, and Samoa Joe covers Bray Wyatt to get the pin. So you have the guy in the ring taking the pin, who is the most recent champion of the five guys in this match. You have Finn Balor using his finishing move to help Samoa Joe pick up the victory. I liked the way everybody was placed in this match and the way that it went down.
I love triple threat finishes where the guy does his finisher and it looks like it's all his and he gets thrown out of the ring. Makes me giggle every time.
Yeah. I thought it was good. I really did think it was good the way they did that. And how do you feel about the way they're kind of booking Finn Balor right now?
I don't know that they know exactly where he's going. Or else they do, and they're just going to keep it all subdued and quiet for right now. Because I don't know how in the world this thing is going to play out, this fatal five-way.
No idea.
I have no feeling.
No clue right now.
No. All I know is one thing is they have done a very nice job of using this match to build Joe and to build Finn. The Finn with Paul Heyman and getting a chance for him to showcase him in matches against multiple people leading up to this has been a positive thing for him. I have no idea where it's going. At some point, I'd be surprised if you don't see him in a match with Brock Lesnar. I don't know if that's great balls of fire or not, but at some point down the road, you don't have Paul Heyman make you like he did,
right,
and then not come together at some point, whether it be great balls of fire down the road. I think that's something that they can build. And I think with Finn, they people still don't know who he is. And I mean, a lot of people who are WWE fans don't know his character. They saw him do that demon entrance one time. They don't know the story of it. They don't know the 24 thing on the network helps. I haven't watched. Have you watched that yet?
No, but they did show Samoa Joe watching it backstage.
Yeah, I have to see that. I still haven't taken the time to watch that.
Yeah. But so they did kind of plug it tonight in Raw, on Monday at
That's
Raw.
That's good. Good. Yeah, I know. You should. And I can promise you, and anybody who's listening to this, I hope, you're more than likely a network subscriber. But if you don't take advantage of those produced shows, WWE original specials, you're missing out. And if you're interested in television production, you should also watch them whether you like wrestling or not, because they're masterpieces, all of them.
Rich Swann beats Noam Dar, Alicia Fox in Noam Dar's corner, Sasha Banks in Rich Swann's corner. We'll get to this when we run through the card for Extreme Rules at the end of the show. That's all we need to really say about that. Backstage, Charlie Caruso is with the Revival. The Revival making their, second TV appearance since they were out with the broken jaw. Dash Wilder has his jaw wired shut, and he shows that. I say second because Scott Dawson is talking up how, yeah, you know what, they haven't been back since he got hurt. And then Charlie brings up the Enzo Amore injury. He says they haven't been around in 6 weeks. Charlie shows a video from last week where she was interviewing Sasha Banks, and you could clearly see the Revival walking in the background. Scott Dawson quickly backtracks on what he originally said and says that they work there. Of course they've been there every week. He then says that Enzo's a bottom feeder and they wouldn't waste their time with him, and then they walk off. This is a nice way to get the Revival back on TV.
And a nice way to help elevate Kaz and Enzo, who've just been kind of sitting there.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it's we'll get more to that and get to that too, because they are doing a very good job of covering a lot of different storylines. I feel like we're seeing more emphasis put on that now than we have in a long time.
Which is good because they have to. Because got a lot. They're not stupid. They see a year down the road or 2 years down the road and see where things are. And look where things are right now. Who's the face of the company that is actually there on a weekly basis? Who?
The Miz? Are you talking that? Are you talking Roman Reigns? Are you talking...
I'm just talking anybody. I mean, I'm talking legitimately. If you're going to go to an arena and try and sell tickets, who's at the top of the card that's really going to move the needle? You could put John Cena on a card or bring WWE to town and they think John Cena's coming. You bring WWE to town without John Cena, and what do you have to sell tickets? They still haven't built that next guy who can be not necessarily his level, but when WWE shows up, they know that that guy is going to be there and that guy's going to sell tickets. I don't know that they have that guy yet.
You know what also?
But they're not there all the time.
This has been happening the last few weeks, and I wonder if the injury to Braun Strowman kind of triggered it. Because you remember they had... Okay, it looks like we're going to get Bray Wyatt, Finn Balor. It looks like we're going to keep getting Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe. Oh, shit. Braun Strowman got hurt. What are we going to do? Let's throw all five guys into a match. So now as you expand storylines, you can have a little, you know, you have a little wiggle room in case there is an injury to a big guy.
And sometimes that's a good thing, too.
Right.
This could end up, we didn't like, there were some things going in certain directions that I know you and I had spoken about. We didn't like. It was like, all right, we know this is going here, here, and here, and didn't like it. Now that it is shaking up, it seems like there's more flexibility and more uncertainty if you're watching as a fan. If you're doing what I'm doing now, which is avoiding everything online and just watching it, there's a lot more moving parts and uncertainty than there was a couple of weeks ago, or I guess only 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, next up, we see Titus O'Neil get the win on Kalisto. He grabs the tights, and in Titus O'Neil's quarter is Apollo Crews. Apollo is not happy with the way Titus has won the match. That storyline's really not going anywhere fast. Next up, John, is probably one of the worst segments of 2017.
I feel so bad. For Alexa Bliss.
Alexa Bliss
that was rough.
Is in the ring for a This Is Your Life Bayley edition, which I feel like we do during every single Bayley feud. It's make fun of Bayley because she always wanted to be a wrestler and she's always been a wrestling fan. That way the people in the crowd who are wrestling fans and have been their whole life and want to be wrestling fans can fall in love with Bayley and be her, you know, they're her favorites. They're the favorites now. She has her fourth grade teacher in the ring, Mrs. Flapper. Which the teacher says that Bailey's dad had to sit in class with her because she cried if her dad wasn't there. Right. Her best friend, Tracy. And her boyfriend, Phil Johnson.
Which is an awesome name. That is the ultimate, what should we call him? How about Phil Johnson? Perfect.
Phil Johnson.
Or he works on the crew somewhere. A gentleman by the name of Phil Johnson.
Or, I don't know, taking a shot at maybe somebody that left the company named Phil.
Yeah, and calling him a Johnson? Well, that's really, that's not reaching hard.
Yeah.
That's funny, too. So, I didn't pick that one up. I was trying to figure out, all right, who are they making fun of with these names?
Right. Yeah.
It would have been really bad if they'd have called the other one April.
Is that the name of AJ's AJ? Name?
Yes.
Well, didn't CM Punk, was he ever with a, I'm trying to think who he.
God, I don't know.
Might have been with before he was with AJ.
I don't know. Wouldn't be as funny, though.
That's true. So, yeah.
So that was the best part of the segment.
The ex-boyfriend said he just wanted to get close to the best, and they started making out, which Booker T, I think, delivered a line that a lot of us felt, which was...
Where did it go? I texted it to you. What was
yes,
it?
Yes. This is hard to watch.
I don't think he had any... That had nothing to do with a kiss. Nothing. It was just a perfect way to slide that line in about the entire segment. Hey, Alexa Bliss, I give her a lot of credit. She didn't... She could have ate that whole thing, and she didn't. She owned it. She battled through it. She ignored it. Can we stop the what? What is the flipping point of all these what chants every time? Is he still doing that? Isn't that like 10 years old? 12 years old? I don't understand the satisfaction or the gratification one gets for trying to ruin a promo with something so stupid.
She's been doing a good job of defending those, deflecting those what chants.
Yeah, but they don't stop because these idiots think that it's cool. It's not cool. It's not cool to sit there and do that. You take it. It's not your show. They're putting on a show for you, and you're trying to ruin the show for a lot of people. And I don't want to hear that when I'm trying to watch them watch the show.
Right.
So they're trying to deliver a promo, and you're taking away from it. It's not like you're cheering or booing or chanting something. You're just being an ass.
Yeah, but it ends up with Bayley and Alexa Bliss feuding. Alexa Bliss grabs a kendo stick under the table while Bayley was unable to get to the one up on the pole, and Bayley takes the worst of it yet again, and she has yet to swing a kendo stick, saving that for the pay-per-view this Sunday.
Huh. Why wouldn't she walk down with her own stick?
Well, she was, there was already one in the ring she wanted to grab.
She could have brought her own, though. Bring your own stick, or don't go down at all.
Backstage, Enzo Amore has been laid out again. I had to rewind this a few times to make sure that this wasn't just a replay from last week.
That's awesome.
Because, yeah, he gets jumped again. Big Cass walks up. He asks where the Revival was. Kurt says it wasn't them. Angle, Cass gets upset. Angle said he's also upset, but Cass needs to calm down, and Angle will help out. Enzo wakes up and tries to recover. We get another. I feel like this is the third or fourth week we've had this match: Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher versus TJP and Neville. Aries and Gallagher end up getting the win in this one. Also, we end up seeing we end up getting another backstage vignette from Goldust, and at the end of it, R-Truth jumps in with his own, where he is quoting movies, so it looks like that is another match. I don't think they've named that one to the card just yet either. And I'm trying to look here. I don't know if I missed it or what. Did I miss already when Big Cass comes out to confront Corey Graves, or did that happen later?
I think you missed that.
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, he came up and got in Graves' face. Yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so Corey Graves at one point, and I'm trying to see exactly where it was. I'm looking through the notes to find out exactly when.
I was right before the "This Is Your Train Wreck Life."
Was it? Okay.
Was it right after?
So
that was before the Kalisto match.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it was. Corey Graves kind of talks about the fact of, you know, he had heard or he kind of knew things about who jumped Enzo. So once again, Corey Graves is kind of hinting that maybe he knows something that other people don't, but isn't really saying anything. So Big Cass comes out really saying, asking Corey Graves if he really insinuated that it was Cass that had something to do with Enzo getting attacked. Corey Graves immediately apologizes and says it was a misunderstanding. So Cass leaves and Michael Cole just immediately goes right back into announcer role. So I ask you this, after Corey Graves' big show, where are they going with this?
Corey Graves is going to be, you know, actually really would be an awesome way to do it. It would suck because he's so good on commentary. But in a company that is having a hard time developing new talent into major stars and really forcing these guys to talk, maybe when they're not ready, to put him to align him with talent, I really think they have a serious need for managers who can talk and help. They have talent, but in some cases they have talent that does need a mouthpiece to get them over. And he would be very, very good at it, and he could be a complete crap disturber like you saw last night. Other than that, I have no idea where they're going to go. Other than he's just being a nuisance to everyone.
And he can't wrestle with his concussions, so...
No, he's retired. Yeah,
yeah. We won't see that. I mean, there may come a day Daniel Bryan wrestles again. There probably will be a day in the next calendar year where Kurt Angle wrestles. Corey Graves is not getting in the ring to wrestle.
No.
So
I don't know.
Yeah, right now it's hard to kind of figure out what a stable would look like of Corey Graves and where they're going with it, but they started planting a lot of seeds on Monday night, that's for sure.
It's definitely clear. There's something very important on the horizon for him. There's a big deal on the horizon for him.
And I wonder if some of this, too, is that Booker T is doing a good job on commentary. It seems like Booker T is doing a little better job than his first go-around on the Raw commentary.
He's great.
So when David Otunga comes back, they can put Otunga there and move Graves to a more of an on-screen role.
Booker T is, like, relaxed now. He seems completely like, I'm just going to say what I want because I'm Booker T and I can. Before, it didn't say like he seemed produced. Like everything was rah rah stuff he said didn't make sense, and now he just seems like he says whatever he feels and what he wants.
So the final match of the night is Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. And John, I didn't care at all about this match. I was not interested in this match at all, and there was nothing about it that I really cared about.
No, it was an odd feeling. The audience didn't seem to care. Dude, you texted me. There's nothing on the line. Why should I care about it? And that's a very good question. If there's a main event on a show, there should be a reason you should care about it. And that is the same thing that could have been done in the middle of the card.
So the match ends with Seth Rollins going to it ends with Roman Reigns getting the victory as Rollins goes to the top rope. He nails the frog splash. Reigns kicks out at two. Rollins' ribs were hurting. Rollins goes for his finisher. At first, he goes for the Phoenix Splash, rolls through it. Reigns runs into a kick. Rollins tries to hit the... I don't even know what he calls the finishing move. The twisting knee to the face. But
the Kenny Omega's finisher, yes.
Yeah, I think it looks terrible. And Roman Reigns hits the spear and gets the win.
That was awesome. The spear, ducking that and going straight into a spear was awesome. That was a great finish. That was terrific. Seth Rollins does, and it's becoming just more and more, it's always been this way. Maybe it stands up more because as a babyface you're doing less of the cheating and the rolling out and all that stuff. He does lots of moves. I mean, lots of moves. And he does a lot of flying moves for a guy who has multiple knee injuries and in the match is trying to sell sore ribs. And after that, he did like four or five more off the top and dove through the ropes. one of those off the tops, but a full extension splash. It's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm just watching a performance and not a wrestling match, not a match at all.
Right. He is,
I'm going to dance for you for 20 minutes.
He's the Kingslayer, but that doesn't, do him much when he's in the ring against Rollins or Samoa Joe. I mean, that works when he's in the ring against Triple H. And we still haven't seen Triple H or Stephanie since WrestleMania.
No. And I want to make sure, I think Seth Rollins is a huge, uber talent. He's amazing. He does stuff that's incredible. Just seems to try and throw it all out there at one time. I mean, that was a lot of high intensity stuff for a Raw main event going into the pay-per-view. It's like you threw the whole paper, everything I got that you're going to see on Sunday, here it is in these 15 minutes on Raw.
So that's Raw. We can move on to a SmackDown. We'll get back to Raw when we go through the Extreme Rules card. SmackDown starts off with backstage promos. It's Charlotte, Carmella, Becky, Natalya, and Tamina about how they're going to win the Fatal 5-Way. John, you compared it to what?
It was like an 80s Royal Rumble. It was awesome. It's exactly what you'd see before Royal Rumbles back in the 80s. When they would lead into the match, and all 30 would cut a 15-second promo on a pay-per-view. It was fantastic. Now, the only thing was they weren't like yelling and screaming like they were in those old Rumbles. And if you've not seen them, go on the network and go throw one on, and you'll laugh when you think about how that looked. Green screen background, it was awesome. I absolutely, absolutely loved it, and there's no way that wasn't discussed of, hey, remember when we did these little hits like 30 years ago? Let's do that tonight. It was great. See, it's too young. You're too young. You missed all that good stuff.
I've seen the old ones where they go through and Vince McMahon is in super announcer voice. And he names pretty much all 30 guys that are in the Rumble. And you realize just how many characters and gimmicks there were back in the day.
Nobody had a name.
Right. And he's just going through
everybody
and naming.
Everybody had a something.
I don't know which Royal Rumble it was, but you just see like the picture of the guy. It's flying through the air and comes through the screen. Then the next one comes through the screen. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen old Rumbles.
Before the match, they would do these little, is when they would do these little things. Yeah, Vince yelled at the open. But what you saw in the open, that's what they would run in the 2 minutes leading up to the actual Royal Rumble match.
So that gives us the start of SmackDown, which is the highlight reel hosted by Kevin Owens.
The United States of America champ apparently opens all SmackDown shows now. This is how they all start.
It's he's the who people want to go see there.
It's amusing. I enjoy it.
Yeah, he says that he will win the briefcase and then win the WWE title to become the face of the entire WWE universe and hold both titles. He then introduces Shinsuke Nakamura to come out. Owens says he doesn't care if Nakamura thinks he's a superstar. This is the Kevin Owens show, and he says the dancing is stupid. Owens invited him to be on the show because people want to know who he is and why. And why he's there. So we keep getting this Nakamura of who are you, who are you, who are you, but then it doesn't seem like Nakamura talks at all.
Why? And again, it's why is it with this pretending that before you were in the WWE doesn't count just pisses me off to no end. He's a bigger star worldwide than anybody in the WWE, with the exception of Brock Lesnar and John Cena. Nakamura will sell out anywhere internationally. And to pretend like that's not known, just and again, the NXT stuff. You just ignore how great, after building him to be what? One of the elite talents for a year in NXT, you bring him up and you just dump on him and pretend like none of that happened? I don't understand that line of thinking. Use their past. That's why they're there. Use what they do while in your company. That's how they got moved up. all these guys move up to NXT, and then they just hit them on the head with a sledgehammer to knock them down a few pegs.
Not all,
but a lot of them.
Owen says that the last person to act like a rock star, he retired, talking about Chris Jericho. Baron Corbin comes out. Sami Zayn also comes out. So, after quite a bit of talking, we get a tag match. Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn against Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens. Sami Zayn did a stretcher job last week, and he's in the opening match of SmackDown.
Absolutely fine, too. Did they even mention it?
They mentioned it. They showed the replay. They showed faces in the crowd.
Yeah, they did that. That's right.
But he didn't really sell anything. Nakamura and Sami Zayn end up getting the win, Nakamura pinning Kevin Owens. And wins in this don't really mean anything. I mean, we're talking about the Fatal 5-Way and the other one. With this, whoever wins and loses doesn't matter because theirs is the pay-per-view they're heading towards is a ladder match.
Yeah, against each other. Hey, I forgot to ask you with Shinsuke. Do you like the being called a rock star and whatever else that thing, the other thing they called him?
I'm fine with him being a rock star because, as you just mentioned, he sells out arenas and that's his thing. I mean, he is seen as being a transcending star. He's a rock star.
A rock star, but we're not going to tell you why.
That part, yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with Shinsuke not, you know, talking. They need to keep giving him more matches to get him over that way.
Yeah, and see, he doesn't have to talk, and that's the thing. In NXT, he spoke, like, I don't know, when the Sami Zayn match was introduced, he said a sentence. And then after that, I think his next promo was like a sentence. He doesn't have to talk. He doesn't need, but you've got to showcase him. They are doing a good job of showcasing him. But then when somebody does talk about him, you build the whole pay-per-view around him, and then, you know, the match falls flat. And then you bring him out, and you've got Kevin Owens and the announcers, too. He did it over there, but so what? That doesn't mean anything. He's here with the big boys now. All that stuff's nothing. No, it's not. I'll stop. It irritates me. It irritates me with him, and it irritates me with Bayley.
And
Becky.
The fast-moving first hour of the show continues where the Usos are in the ring saying that they have beaten everybody, American Alpha, Breezango. They take shots at the Atlanta Falcons, as you said earlier. They were in Atlanta, Georgia. And they go on to say that no team goes as hard as them. But then we hear the voice of Big E, and the New Day have finally arrived at SmackDown. Nothing different about the entrance, nothing different about what they're wearing, anything like that. So no changes made. It is the New Day that you know and love. Big E, Xavier Woods, Kofi come down to the ring. Xavier Woods has the mic first. He says hello to his mom in the front row, says he likes her shirt, and then lets everyone know that they are in his hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. Kofi is interrupted by the Usos, who say that they are going to welcome them to the Uso Penitentiary. Big E says that they know what happens in a penitentiary, and they like the tag team titles, and they want the tag team titles. They kind of go back and forth a little bit, and Xavier Woods basically tells the Usos that at Money in the Bank, it's going to be the New Day versus the Usos.
My favorite part of the segment is I love that they have mic windscreens that match the color of their face on their T-shirt.
I've never noticed that.
Kofi is a pink on his shirt, and he has a pink mic flag or mic windscreen, and the other one's blue, and the other one's green. That's fantastic.
That's way too much attention to detail.
That's when you know you've made it. And that's these guys. You listen to these guys talk about how they've come up with this whole thing, you know, how it all started like a year before they ever came something on television. And then they had to go through that garbage that Vince thought was going to work that didn't. But these guys, it's something as goofy as, you know, the dress code. Well, you have to dress unless you're able to, you know, unless it's part of, you know, you do the tracksuit thing as part of your gimmick. And so they did, okay, we're going to go out and we're going to get custom New Day tracksuits and we're going to wear those everywhere so we don't have to wear ties. That's what they did. It's that they're so in tune. And you're right. The attention to detail is just something as stupid as that. Those are three guys who love their character and they are protecting their character.
We get another edition of the Fashion Files up next as Fandango is walking backstage. He goes into a room and he sees a silhouette of Summer Rae, the shadow of Summer Rae. And then when he turns to look at who is there, it's Tyler Breeze still wearing the dress from last week.
How much longer is he going to do the dressing up thing? It was really funny in the tag match. It's funny, but is this his new thing that just he's going to dress up every week?
Well, yeah, he changes too. He ended up being the janitor in their match against the colognes, which during the backstage segment, they are spraying themselves with cologne because they are facing the colognes.
Which is another. There's your attention to detail right there. Well done.
Yeah. So.
Underused word, hibiscus. Fandango says hibiscus very well.
They are. This is just fun to watch. I mean, it's a fun middle of the show thing to do. Even if they are not in a main event picture, it's fun to have them on the show. And this is I look forward to seeing the Fashion Files now.
They are entertaining in the vignettes and in the promos, and they're very talented in the ring, which I will say every week.
Yeah. That is when we get – I already told you I won't get to it when we get there, but they end up facing the colognes, and they get the win against the colognes. But before that, fatal five-way elimination match, Charlotte, Carmella, Natalya, Tamina, and Becky Lynch.
Hold up! They got rid of Fatal. They dumped Fatal. Last week they said it was a Fatal 5-Way. This week, 5-Way elimination. It was not a Fatal 5-Way elimination last week, unless I am totally mistaken. I do not remember them saying anything about elimination. Just that it was a Fatal 5-Way.
Well, one of the reasons we don't really get to that is because the women all start kind of fighting. They all start fighting. James Ellsworth takes a big bump. The women are going at it, and we end up seeing Charlotte powerbomb Natalya through a table.
That was awesome.
Yeah. A holy shit chant starts out too. The bell never rang. Shane McMahon ends up having to come out. He talks about how great the women's division is. He says the competition is crazy, so they're going to do something big and historic. And he announces that Charlotte, Natalya, Tamina, Carmella, and Becky will have a women's Money in the Bank match.
It's awesome.
Naomi gets the night off.
Now the only thing left for the women will be a Royal Rumble. A modified, not 30-person necessarily, but a Royal Rumble of some sort. They've had a Hell in a Cell. They've had a steel cage match. They've had a regular ladder match. They've had a no DQ. They've had the Iron Women matches and this Money in the Bank. So really, what else is this? That's all that's left. That, and then whenever the hell Triple H gets to make all the decisions and we have a female version of the War Games, then we will have had everything.
Oh, Elimination Chamber.
Oh, I forgot they brought that back. You're right.
Yeah.
That should be something that the Raw women get to do.
Did you mention Hell in a Cell? You mentioned Cage Match where they did do a Hell in a Cell. I could see having a 12, 15 woman Royal Rumble. Especially with the I think you do half of what the men have.
Now you get to 15 or 20 and you include the NXT ladies.
John, right here you have five in this Money in the Bank mm-hmm. match. So, and I mean, there's what, five, six over on the other side. You add in, you know, Peyton Royce, Asuka. Asuka, I'm sorry. You had, I mean, yeah, 15 would be fine at 90 seconds, and especially to kind of kick off the Royal Rumble next year.
And you have Nikki Bella, and you have your girl Eva Marie, if she ever is going to work there.
No,
again.
She's done. She's done wrestling.
She is done. Okay.
Yeah, she's done wrestling.
That's unfortunate. Paige, if she ever works there again after the movie comes out, and then you have your old school ladies come back.
Yeah.
Who want to do it?
I do think that we're heading there. If they're going to give them Money in the Bank, they're going to give them a Royal Rumble.
They keep showing up. Yeah. That's the thing. This stuff wouldn't happen if they weren't putting on amazing performances and drawing a crowd in. I'm ecstatic about what this is. I think this is great. I think they're going to be able to put on a great show.
This is the point in the show where I'm going to give away the Money in the Bank tickets, too, as we are talking about that. Yeah, you tweet at me, at Joe Roderick, and just tell me who your pick is in the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. First one to do that gets two tickets to that. You'll be sitting right next to, right near me and John for that.
All right.
Charlotte, Natalia, Tamina, Carmella, and Becky. Who is your pick to do that? Tweet at me, at Joe Roderick. First person to do that gets two tickets to Money in the Bank.
I do have one question before you move on.
Yes.
The official in this match and two other officials, which is Kyoto and the guy whose name I never remember, who also came down. Do they have like wave off class at NXT when they teach these guys like how to be an official? Like, this is how you wave off. This is how you motion them into the ring. Make sure you stand behind them where they can't see. Don't get anywhere near them. Just act like you're trying to do something.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you mean.
All right. So the official, this whole thing starts breaking out. He's standing in the ring and he's yelling, "Come on, Charlotte. Come on, so-and-so. Come on, come on." And he's just waving his hands like he's an umpire saying that someone is safe. And he does this like 15 times. Like, I don't know exactly what he's trying to do with that because he's not like ending the match or starting a match. And then when they go out of the ring, he's motioning for them to go back into the ring. All these things are being done, though, behind them. So the person who's getting their ass kicked, they can see him. But the person who is who he needs to be really in the face of can't see them. It's little stupid crap that, you know, pisses me off that doesn't make any sense. So you have three officials standing there in the corner with five women, two of which are always working at once because the other ones are laying out. And they're just standing there acting like they're telling them to stop and wave their arms and everything. It looks ridiculous. Get in their way, have them throw you out of the way, then you're out of the way, and then it can all happen, and then they can – it looks ridiculous when you're standing there yelling, hey, excuse me, you need to get – excuse me, you need to get – I know you can't see what I'm saying, but you need to get into the ring. It's little stuff. Joe, you could be an official. You would get in there. You get between Charlotte and Becky, make sure they stop messing around and get things started.
I just want to run down and slide into the ring.
Isn't that terrifying though? Like what might happen?
Yeah, you just got to practice it a bunch.
I'd love to know how many times like John Cena did it before he was comfortable doing it.
Right.
Because he and Ziggler too, because he about dives through the ring sometimes. He's done it where he's gone all he almost overshot it once when he did it.
That would be my thing. I would try to overshoot it and then somehow turn in the middle and that way land on my feet on the other side. Yeah, nobody's done that for an entrance yet.
But I think the first goal is not to knock your junk on the apron or to slingshot your neck on the bottom rope.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of room there.
You could just get a trampoline like Kalisto.
You got to get enough juice running down there, too, to be able to make that happen.
And you're running downhill.
Yeah, get some serious speed.
You're running downhill, and then you hit flat ground before you have to launch.
Correct. And you got about, what, four steps, three steps? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going from concrete to padding.
All right. I'll try to call in a few favors and see what I can arrange for us. When they're in town.
See if you can get in there and try and do it. What is it you really want to do? What is it about wrestling you really want to do? I just want to hit the ropes and slide into the ring. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't want to do anything else.
I just want just play any music and I want to walk out like it's an entrance. I just want to see what that's like going through the curtain.
It's got to be, yeah. We've talked to enough guys. They all say the same thing. There's no feeling like it. It's irreplaceable.
Orton is out next. He is wearing street clothes, and this promo that he cuts is a little odd because he talks about, you know, the big names that he's beaten and talks about, he talks about his dad, and then he mentions his grandfather, who says that his grandfather would slap him if he were alive for losing the title to a guy like Jinder Mahal. I'm sorry, Randy, but I don't think guys like Jinder Mahal were allowed to wrestle back when your grandfather was wrestling, if you know what I mean.
Know. You have to go look at the old school NWA.
Was there a Sheik back then? Was the original Sheik wrestling? Would he have been wrestling the original Cowboy Bob?
Oh, he wasn't a cowboy. He was just Robert Orton.
Oh, Robert Orton. Okay, I'm sorry. And then somehow Bob became a cowboy, and Randy is not a cowboy.
Everybody has a gift.
Put into his swimming pool on YouTube. That the cowboy.
Oh, I
you haven't seen that?
That sounds fantastic. No.
Oh, yeah, it's just Orton playing in his pool in his backyard, and I'm guessing because you see his kids, you don't see his wife. I'm guessing his wife is just filming it, and one of his sons is just going to jump in the pool and, you know, just having fun with his friends or brothers he has. And then you see it earlier, and then as his son's pulls his son by the neck and gives him an arc.
Huh. Oh, time that was, he competed in the 60s. WA Tag Team Champion with Eddie Graham.
Okay.
1966. Let's see, 1961, he competed for the NWA Capital Wrestling Federation, which is now done with Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. There was already a cowboy. Yeah.
Jinder.
There's your history lesson on the great Mr. Orton.
Jinder's music, and he appears on the big screen. Jinder says that he's like every other ignorant American, tells stories of the bygone era. His father and grandfather, while the country is in decay. Jinder goes on and raises the title. Stares at the camera. The promo ends. Orton poses, and the music hits. He leaves. So 2 weeks in a row, Jinder wins the title from Randy Orton, and we have yet to see Jinder and Randy Orton that here in.
And I like that. That's good. But again, that's old school stuff. Champion stays away. Champion fights. Champion fights for money on pay per view. You pay. I love everything that they how they have done this from the beginning of the Jinder and Randy thing. Oh, I need to correct something. Mr. Orton was Rocky. That's Cowboy Rocky Fitzpatrick when he was the number one contender to Bruno Sammartino.
Oh, okay.
So there's your cowboy. Cowboy Damn. Rocky Fitzpatrick led to Cowboy Bob Orton, led to not Cowboy Randy Orton.
That's the final match of the night. Dolph Ziggler defeating AJ Styles. AJ goes for the phenomenal forearm at the end. Ziggler knocks him off and then nails a super kick, covers him for the win. So clean victory for Dolph Ziggler over AJ.
Yeah, and then we stare at the box. Stare up at the case. And that's how the shows will end until they get here.
I'm fine with
stare
that.
At the case. Yes.
Show me that all nights, six guys have a chance.
I'm very curious to see how they're going to do that. One of these nights, the women have to finish the show. One of these couple, they have three more SmackDowns before they're here, or two more SmackDowns before they're here. The women should close out one of them next week. The women should close it out. They need to make this is a big deal they're doing. They need to be made to be a big deal. Do you think they'll open the show? The women.
I think so. Now that it's for this, yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great way to open.
And plus,
advertise it that they're going to open it. Make it a big deal that this is going to be your lead. Make sure you don't want to be late. You don't want to miss it.
Yeah. By the way, during this show, it should also be mentioned that the WWE even tweeted out Mojo Rawley is also calling out Shane McMahon, kind of waiting for his turn on things, and still no Rusev. So is Rusev just not going to do anything until the Predators are gone?
I was going to ask you about the Rusev thing. I forgot to do it last week. What happened? How do you do 2 weeks? And again, this goes back to why they blew it off the 2 weeks that they showed him doing his little videos on his phone. He says he's going to show up. No mention of him not showing up. He tweets he's at a hockey game. And now here we are again, second week into building Money in the Bank, and still, I mean, not even a mention of his name that I heard, at least on the version. The Hulu version, I think, pretty much unedited from what everybody else sees, and they don't even say his name. But it was, I'm going to come and see Shane McMahon and confront him because I want my title shot.
At Money in the Bank.
Ignoring him. Yeah, they've gone from that to – and they started promoting this before Backlash.
This
was the first thing they promoted for Money in the Bank. This was like the only thing they talked about regarding Money in the Bank before Backlash had happened.
So maybe he comes out at Money in the Bank and that's how Jinder keeps the title?
That's puzzling. Then what was the purpose of the two weeks?
I mean, he reminded him, and Shane never called him. He's just been sitting by the phone waiting for Shane to call.
But he said he was showing up, and then he went to the hockey game. And they never mentioned it on TV that he didn't. They didn't say he wasn't there. They never even made mention of it after they said he said he was going to show up next week.
Predators are more important.
Right. Okay, then say that on TV. Don't ignore that it happened. Spent 2 weeks saying that something's going to happen, and it's like, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. Ah, they'll forget.
So that's your TV for the week. Overall, up week, down week, as far as what we saw?
Raw was awful.
SmackDown a little better, you think?
I saw the shortened version. I enjoyed SmackDown. I did not enjoy Raw. I enjoyed the first segment of Raw. I don't know when the last time I saw a cruiserweight match was, because that never matters.
Not missing anything. You're okay.
The Hulu cut.
Don't worry.
But they seem to be dedicating a lot of time to it and promoting 205 Live when I read these recaps. I wish they'd spent some of that promoting NXT. But I'm curious about the Graves thing. I think it was the beginning of something. But as far as getting you into a go home show for a pay per view, it was not like, yes, I have to see Extreme Rules this weekend. It's like, yes, Extreme Rules is going to be on this weekend.
I'm intrigued by Extreme Rules because I have no clue who's going to win this 5-way match for the number one contender.
Yeah, that, and I want to see a cage match, tag team match. I have no idea how this works.
Everyone's just in the ring. It's a Texas tornado match or what have you. But here is the match, or here is the card for this Sunday. A mixed tag team match. Rich Swann and Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. So you're getting the women's division and the cruiserweight division all together.
I can't wait to see a cruiserweight match. It's been a while.
The other cruiserweight match on the card, Neville defends his title again against Austin Aries in a submission match for the cruiserweight championship.
They should just eliminate the cruiserweight division and have Aries and Neville on every pay-per-view. And that's all they do. They don't do anything else. They just put on a show once a month.
I mean, Kalisto will be down there. I should start wrestling with them in a bit. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
The Hardy Boys, as you mentioned, against Cesaro and Sheamus in the steel cage.
This is going to be awesome. I'm very excited about this. These guys have been awesome the last few weeks to watch. They've been one of the bright spots on Raw. And anytime you're going to put Jeff and Matt into a creative match, I hope that Cesaro and Sheamus are ready to get their ass kicked and to take a beating. And they're probably two perfect guys for something like this because they'll be happy to do it.
I just hope we see a little more of the broken gimmick come out.
I don't think you're there yet. Not yet. Slow it. Just take your time. There's plenty of time. That's something that can come out when if you get to a point that him and Jeff break up, that they're going to split. And he goes off and becomes a crazy person. That's how you can do it.
Alexa Bliss defends her championship against Bayley in a kendo stick on a pole match.
I hate on a pole matches, but the match will be very good. It'll be a hell of a lot better than This Is Your Life was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these two should put on a good match, and hopefully we actually get to see them have a real wrestling match rather than a gimmick match in the future. Dean Ambrose defends his title against The Miz. If Dean Ambrose is disqualified in a pay-per-view titled Extreme Rules, he loses the title.
Has Maryse been banned from ringside yet? Or is that going to happen on Sunday?
She is not.
Okay. So that'll happen on Sunday after she hits Miz with a chair or something?
Do you think they'd start the match that quickly like that?
I would. Like when the New Age Outlaws pinned each other. That's exactly what I would do.
I forgot that they did that. That's great. Though they tried to pin each other. They tried to pin each other and it got broken up.
Oh, they pinned each other in the one and then they changed it. It's a New Age Outlaws rule. Now you can't do that. You can't both be in the ring at the same time.
I remember, I thought it was a WrestleMania where they tried to do that and it was broken up. Like the headbangers broke it up.
Maybe. But they did it once and they won. That's how they won the belts. And then that rule went into place.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, why wouldn't you do this? If it's a DQ, that'd be the first thing I'd do. Bell rings, hit me with something. Done. Although the rules change all the time. Did you notice in the Fandango and the Breezango match, they were able to get away with using squirt guns to the face? That was legal?
Well, so was a mop to the face. The props that the Breezango uses, those are fine.
Those are legal.
Yes.
I'm very confused. I get confused with the rules.
Yeah, those are okay. And then finally, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt, Samoa Joe. A fatal five-way Extreme Rules match. First person to get a pin will face Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire.
I have no idea where it's going to go, but I'll just pick Finn.
I'm going with, I'm going to go Seth.
Oh, nobody picks Roman. We always should just assume that Roman's in the main event. He wins.
I just hope something happens. Because I fear that they are saving Roman Reigns versus Brock for a big pay-per-view.
Yeah, the big pay-per-view, unfortunately, is what I'm scared of. But Braun being hurt might be the best thing that ever happened to that possibility.
Yeah, it just doesn't strike me as a WrestleMania match. So there you go. We another week in the books. We did tell you at some point in this podcast how you can win Money in the Bank tickets. You got to go find it, though, if maybe you skipped to the end thinking that we were just going to save it to the end. Nope, didn't do it that way. So you actually have to listen. So, John, until next week, I am actually doing my radio show up in Chicago this weekend at Full Shilling Public House, just a 3-minute walk from Wrigley Field.
Nice. And you have guests?
I'm working on a few, waiting to hear back from that. So I have things that I am not going to promote yet. For that, I am working on getting guests on site. I'll be at the game Friday and Saturday in the press box, so I feel like even then I could see who is there and who I could talk to and try to get lined up as well. So that's
CM
my
Punk
plan.
Goes to games, right?
I have tweeted at CM Punk. I have, and I will look for him as well. I've emailed UFC. UFC,
please.
UFC, you know what? God bless it. UFC owes me too. Because they keep screwing me on Dana White each and every Super Bowl, and they have for the past 4 years on that. They owe me a favor. I need to email this guy back and say, hey, remember when you screwed me on Dana White again? Give me Punk.
Do you think that that CM Punk is high on their list of guys we want out promoting our brand right now?
He was just on MLB Network.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, he was with Brian Kenny. What?
To do what?
He is doing an MTV challenge. He's on the MTV Challenge show.
Oh, yeah, I did know that.
You know why UFC wants CM Punk out there promoting their brand? Because because it will be put on social media and CM Punk will retweet it to his 2.71 million followers.
And of all the people who are employed by UFC, none are as well known other than there's like Conor McGregor and then there's CM Punk.
Correct.
Everybody knows who CM Punk is.
Correct.
Unfortunately, he's 0-1, but the majority didn't even know he was a UFC fighter.
That's fine. He talks about it and they get free publicity.
Yeah. No, you're right. That makes perfect sense. And mm-hmm. They'll put him on because people will people know who he is, and so MLB Network has no problem putting him on.
So there you go. There's the show for this week. I will be up there. We'll see who I can drag in to do the show with me. So, John, until then,
safe travels.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.